This audio consists of edited highlights of a press conference held by the Irish Palestine Solidarity Campaign on the return of some of the people who had been on the Gaza Freedom Flotilla from Israeli prison. You might also want to listen to the audio of the public meeting held after Derek Graham had returned from the Rachel Corrie. You'll find that on indymedia.ie at article 96973. You'll find more information on the campaign at www.ipsc.ie.
There was one, at one stage there was a reference to conditions, and it's a question I think I'd have some difficulty answering if any journalist asked me what the conditions were like while we were in
I'm not sure I want to answer that question, because the conditions weren't good. Not that we were held in some sort of hellhole with rats running about the place, but we were taken from international waters, kidnapped, brought to a country we didn't want to be in, and held in a prison. Those are not good conditions under any circumstances. It wasn't a nice experience. Now, having said that, I think the Israeli system broke down to some extent once we got to the prison. They had it well worked out in terms of the commando raids on the boat, etc. They had it well worked out in terms of the way in which they processed us. But the prison officers clearly were unable to deal with the situation. As prison officers, I suspect they felt that they could be heavy-handed. I suspect they were told that they weren't allowed to assault us, they weren't allowed to be too rough with us, because there were a number of occasions when prison officers were attempted to be rough with us and were held back by other prison officers. Also, we had some latitude in there. But I have to say, we took that latitude because we decided that we were not prisoners, that we were kidnap victims, and we would not accept their authority. We actually established a committee and we put demands to them. One of those demands was that we have immediate access to our embassy officials. We weren't allowed a phone call. We were told that the embassy officials had been contacted. Because of the pattern that had developed, we were quite sure that these were all lies. Ultimately, embassy officials did come in, and we had, and that was the beginning of the end of the situation for us. Because up until then, we were in a bubble. We had no communication with the outside world. We had no idea what was going on. But once the embassy officials came in and they began to see what had happened, people showed them their wounds and so on, I think it was clear then to the Israeli authorities that the message was getting out. And by the way, just in terms of people's injuries and so on, there were people from the Turkish ship in there. They came in late in the day, and I also met some in Istanbul afterwards. There was one character came in, and he pulled up his shirt and he showed me bite marks on his stomach where a dog had bitten him, and it was a savage bite mark. Other people had their heads broken open. There was extreme violence used. I mean, there really was extreme violence used. The badly wounded were obviously taken away for medical care, but the walking wounded were put into the prison cells, and there were a lot of stories. There were stories of people, you know, one person told me of seeing a man on the Turkish ship with a bullet hole through his forehead. There were lots of stories of the brutality that occurred. And it was at that stage we began to realise that this was more than just about Challenger 1. I mean, I'm not saying that we thought it was about Challenger 1, but we were dealing with our own experiences, processing our own experiences. But as we were going through processing, Ava, who was on the boat, was told by an Israeli soldier that perhaps up to 16 people had been killed on the Turkish ship. And it was then we began to realise the enormity of what had occurred. And then we began to get the stories and so on. And I mean, really, these were horror stories in terms of the vicious attack carried out on the Turkish ship. But I have to say, I'm not surprised, because if what happened to us was writ large in the context of any resistance whatsoever, I mean, the resistance we offered had to be limited for various reasons. Our boat was a large pleasure cruiser. There was no way we could defend it properly from the Israeli military. We didn't attempt really to do anything except impede their progress in order to protect the journalists. But in the context of a large ship like the Turkish ship, with hundreds of people on board, it was inevitable that any military attack on a ship like that was going to provoke some resistance. And we saw some of that as we sped past while trying to outmanoeuvre and outrun the Zodiacs. Hoses were being used in what I consider to be a justified attempt to stop piracy. They attempted to push these people away using hoses. It was a light form of resistance in a way, but it was clear to me that once they got onto the ship, people were going to try and stop them, to impede them, and the Israelis, judging them by the viciousness of their attack on our boat and the aggressive attitude they have, I felt that it wouldn't be beyond them to open fire. So I suppose while I was shocked, I really was shocked when I heard about the deaths, I wasn't surprised. I just felt that they had gone for this by all means necessary. They wanted to seize control. I mean, there were other ways to deal with the Turkish ship. If I was in charge of the Israeli operation, I think the obvious thing to have done was to seize the ships that were easy to take, the cargo ships and the two smaller passenger ships, and isolate the large Turkish ship with a blockade, put ships in front of it, push it back and so on. But any attempt to physically take the Turkish ship was almost inevitably going to end in deaths. And they went in with guns. They strafed the boat from a helicopter. We heard gunshots as we passed. There is no question but they intended to take that ship by force. And if that meant walking over dead bodies, they intended to do it.
Okay, at this point I might let people put some questions to Fintan, and then if you have a specific question for Issam or Fiacra, that's fine. Otherwise I'll let them then take the floor and just speak a little bit afterwards, okay? So just if you have a question, just identify where you're
from. At the moment, but maybe just for Fintan questions.
Just for Fintan, unless they have a specific question.
You talked about points where yourself, Fiacra, maybe Issam, experience beatings or attacks. Do you know specifically where the commandos, prison guards, or police? I mean, we've just heard this, there's Israeli forces, but I mean, to actually identify those people is quite important, probably.
Which beatings?
It is important, but the problem is they didn't identify themselves. The commandos that came onto our boat, I suspect, were naval commandos. They were certainly used to the use of Zodiacs. They were able to board our boat very, very quickly. That requires training, so I think it's fair to assume they were naval commandos. They wore masks and they had numbers, 1 to 20. I mean, that was the only identification. They would not identify themselves to us at all. On land, no, I mean, what do you mean?
It was the commandos at sea and land, it was the prison officers, or was it police?
Exactly. I mean, there were Navy personnel plus police in the processing area, prison officers obviously in the prison, and at the airport there were military and police.
And Mossad.
And
Mossad throughout. Mossad were in the prison, and Mossad were everywhere we went.
I think the least violent of the groups that we encountered were probably the prison officers, and I think that's because they were constrained for various reasons. I think they were probably told that they were to behave themselves, and they were aggressive at times.
All different forms of the police, the prison guards, and the soldiers.
Say that again.
You experienced violence from all the different ones.
I wouldn't say that's true. I don't remember seeing any instances of violence from the prison guards, but that's not to say that they didn't elsewhere in the prison. I on our wing, it wasn't there.
Justine Perkins, Sunday Times. There are photographs circulating on the internet of a piece of paper that purports to be a hit list that was found on the Turkish ship. What do you say to speculation that the people who were shot dead were specifically targeted?
I don't know. The information I got from some of the people that were on the boat was that some of the shooting was fairly random. But it does. I know about the document you speak of, and it does seem that they were out to seize, if not kill, certain people. Personally, I suspect they were out to seize certain people, but maybe they were out to kill them. I don't know. I mean, it is only speculation, and I certainly can't do anything more than speculate about that. They were definitely after certain individuals.
Question in at the back.
Harry Brown, following up to some extent on Justine's question, I noticed, Fintan, that you were talking about the what you saw as the continuity between what the commandos did on your boat and what they did on the Turkish boat. I was in America when this happened on Monday, and from the very start there was, and you've seen the New York Times over the week, an attempt to suggest that on the one hand you have sort of well-meaning, possibly naive Westerners rising out of the international solidarity movement and the Free Gaza campaign, but that in a sense this has been hijacked by this Turkish NGO, IHH, and that what you found yourself in was a flotilla that was largely funded by IHH and which had a purpose beyond any purpose that you would have been able to... in other words, that the Free Gaza movement had allowed itself to be essentially hijacked by an Islamist NGO.
Well, I mean, I'd obviously reject that. To begin with, there were a number of groups involved in the flotilla. There was Free Gaza, there was a Swedish group, a Greek group, and there was the IHH. The IHH did manage to raise the funds for a large ferry. They were by no means the leadership of the flotilla. I think there was an equality there to some degree, but they were certainly a very large element. The Israelis quite possibly had a particularly... nasty attitude towards the Turkish ship. I mean, that may be the case because of the... they obviously might have political problems with the people leading the charity, etc. And, you know, maybe they do. But I have to say, the attack on the Turkish ship... Was the violence specific to that? I don't think so. I think if there were other large ships from Greece or from other countries that they were attempting to take in the same way, they'd have encountered the same situation and they would have used violence. I mean, these are the imponderables. We don't know because there was only one large ship with a large contingent. That was the Turkish ship.
I suppose it must be stressed as well that all of the passengers and the cargo in each country from which they departed were all screened
Yes. And
security checked. Even as Shane told us the other day, when passengers were transferred from one boat to the other at sea, they still underwent the same security checks as any passenger who boarded on land. So I've heard this assertion do the rounds that, you know, the IHH are a terrorist organisation or have terrorist links. To suggest this would really be to suggest that the Turkish government had somehow or another, gone against its own security screening system and allowed this to happen, hence, you know, allowing a terrorist attack on Israel to occur. This is a genuine... PR, what would we call it, a red herring that the Israelis are throwing out there, really. It's yet another attempt to excuse the inexcusable. IHH are a registered NGO in Turkey, and the Turkish government, as I've said, had screened all of the people and all of the cargo that went on that ship.
I think it's joining up though as well, Frieda.
Okay, this is Shane for everybody. Do you want to come and join us, actually?
I went to the Oireachtas Committee of Foreign Affairs yesterday and advised them when we were recalled by the Israeli Defence Forces on the night. They asked the security status of each of the vessels in the flotilla. None of the vessels were requested to increase their security status by their flag state. So they were all on the security status 1, which is the lowest security status, which is the normal security for any vessel entering or leaving an Irish port at the moment. It's a new thing after 9/11 that they brought in this security status system, and it meant that every vessel had been checked in its home or in its departure port. So the governments of the countries were not worrying, or I had no cause of concern to increase the status of the security of the vessels. If they'd known there was going to be international pirates, maybe they would have asked them to increase the status. And as I said yesterday in the Oireachtas report, the defence methods used by all the vessels, fire hoses being deployed on the cargo vessels, this is a normal anti-piracy tactic that's used going through the Malacca Straits, used going past Somalia to prevent pirates from boarding from small craft. There was nothing untoward to be seen from our vessel as we passed the other ships.
At this point, I might just ask Sam to say a few words. Is that okay?
Sorry?
Do you want to speak just briefly about your experience on the Greek ship, and then I want to get Pietro to speak about his experience.
I will start from the night before we arrived to 50 miles to Gaza. Of course, my friend explained everything for when we move from Greece. I was with a Greek boat. There is many international with us, American people, Greek people, French, Czech Republic, and Swedish. And two doctors from Palestine, and maybe six or seven ladies, different nationalities as well, Algeria, American, Greek. So it was 12 o'clock the night. The captain, they had some meeting with the captain. They told us, I saw some boats behind us, so we have to be ready. I think maybe the Israeli soldiers, they are coming. So the captain said, we try to protect ourselves. We don't need to fight with the Israeli soldiers. So we need to protect the journalists and the room of control for the boat. So and then 2 hours later, or 3 hours later, they surprised us. Really, it was very dark. We don't know where from coming. So they came, maybe five or four boat around the small boat around the our boat. There's many soldiers. They and we collect all the people. We try to take our hand together, and we try to push them out. They are not allowed to come to our boat. So they shot. They start to shoot us. Many from everywhere. Everywhere from what we can't. The first 10 minutes we can't control ourselves. Then we go upstairs and we make a circle around the room control, and the captain inside, and Al Jazeera channel, and some journalists. So they try, they hit us in the electric and all my body.
Tasers.
And
tasers.
Yeah, and they shot me very close, all my body, all the passengers, and we push them strongly. We don't fight, just we push them, and we are not criminal. We are not come to fight. Just let us pass to Gaza. We try, we need to help the people, and we need to give them food and medicine, and they need everything. Just and they arrested us in international water. It is not allowed to stop us for international water. They don't care. They shot us again. Shut up and sit down. They're like mafia. There is no behavior. They don't. They're not respect anyone. So it was until it's 1 hour and a half. We try to push them, but they are coming many soldiers, and they 6 o'clock, 5 or 6 o'clock. The captain, he said, we have to be. Please sit down, and just we need to show the world the Israeli behavior. And then they check everyone separately. So there's someone, the leader for the soldiers. They said, you have to keep everything, your luggage downstairs. It's not allowed to take everything. Just if you are sick, we have a doctor. We have a doctor. So we refuse the Israeli doctor. We have two Palestinian doctors. We don't need your doctor. So, and then they take us downstairs. They said, if you need any food or anybody sick, or do you want to try to use and to drink water. So we refuse either everything. We have food, we have water, we have everything. We don't need everything from you. So when and I asked them, I have to use the toilet. So they take me two soldiers in downstairs and toilet, So they told me you have to keep the door open. You don't close the door. I said, no, you are not allowed to watch me and use the toilet. So they said, no, you have to keep it open. And I refused that until they closed the door. When I get to use toilet, get in the toilet, they open the door. And I know they will open the door because I'm waiting for that. And then they are very scared. They check me before I get in the toilet. I said to them, are you afraid? You are not, because you check me three times. We don't have a guns. I don't have any weapons, no knife. You take everything, my wallet, my jacket, my... So why are you afraid? He said, I'm not afraid. No, you're afraid, because you are not right. So and then we keep same position until we move to Ashdod port. So and then they bring the camera when we start to eat some food. They use the camera. I know they would like to show the Israeli TV. We are very good with them. We don't shoot them. We give them food, water, everything. They're lying. No. Don't believe them. So, and then we arrive in Ashdod port about 2 o'clock noon, afternoon. And they close all the window when I arrive to the boat. We saw many, many soldiers. They're waiting for us and policemen. And they close, whenever they close the window, they said, you are not allowed to see anything outside. Because they say, we are come to Israel. We said, there is no Israel. We came to Palestine. And they don't like, when you say they don't like Palestine, they don't like that. They're very, very angry. So, and then they take everyone separately. Maybe 5-7 minutes between one to one. So, and they check you again, and they take all of the passenger inside the small hall, and they bring doctors, and they bring food, and they bring water, drinks, juice, but we refuse to take everything. We refused to meet doctors. I was very sick, and they said, I'm not sick. Don't touch me. I can contact with our doctors, Palestine doctor. So they asked me again when they take me to a small office, what's your name, where come from? You are Arabic. Said, you are Arabic. So I said to him, yes, I'm Arabic, original Arabic, but I can't speak Arabic. I speak Arabic very well. So because I know why do you ask me, they ask me you Arabic. I know if you take me separately, they will kill me. They don't like Arabic people to come to, you know, Israeli. So they ask me again, you come to Israel. I said to him again, there is no Israel. I'm coming to Palestine. And then they take me to the other. They take some details, my name, my date of birth, my mother name, father name. Fill the small form, and then they take me to the other office to check me again. So they take my jacket off, they take my wallet, and they take my trousers off. And they check me, and they send me to the other office. They said me sit down in that small chair. I sit, and I make operation in my knee, so I need to take some rest. I put my leg in the chair. The soldiers, when they saw me, they come and kick the chair out. So I said to him, "You are monkey." So he. He doesn't answer. What he said, you are a monkey, and don't talk to me. And when I try to take my leg up, they take the chair away. So and then they, I don't know which what's going on with the each other. Two groups, because they have, they said you have to sign, you have to a deportation to your country or you have to go to the jail. So some people they are not signed, I know, but I'm signed for deportation because I know what's going on if they take me to the jail. Because they ask me many questions, hey, are you Arabic, are you Arabic, are you Arabic? And then, okay, I said to him, I have to go to Dublin, to send me to Dublin. I'm not going to the jail. So they take me out with other groups from Czech Republic, Bulgaria and Greek, and one from Algeria and Tunisia. They had European passport, and they another car. They waiting us outside. They take us immediately to the till before airport, 20-25 mile, I think. So this it's my friend that he's fighting with them. They try to some smoke. They are not allowed to smoke outside. when we arrive to the jail, they check us again. You take your jacket off and give us your wallet and your money and your medicine and your passport. Check everything. Just to tell them, keep my clothes. I need my clothes. Don't take everything. And said, they're not allowed to take your luggage and your camera. They took everything. All the cameras, all the luggage. Just you take your passport and your medicine. And then they take every three or four in the small room. So they said, until you flight time, we have to take you to airport. But we don't know what time and which day. And then I said to the police that I need my medicine because every 2 or 3 hours I should take my medicine. He said, no, you are not allowed to take your medicine in the room. So I take your medicine, and when you need it, just call us. So I said to him, this medicine, you should take, leave my medicine with me. I'm sick. So why you can't do nothing? So Sharab is not allowed. Just sit down and go get in the room. And when we try to use toilet, maybe they come back after 4 hours, 2 hours. I don't know.
And it was always later.
Yeah, always later.
Later.
And then when you bring the food, they just threw the food. Hey, they saw your food. Hey, you're not an animal. You have to respect each other. Excuse me, hello. But you know, Israeli, and there is no behavior. And then the next day, they came to NBC, Irish Embassy.
Irish ambassador came.
Irish ambassador came.
Morning, yeah.
And he don't know I'm here with the Johnson. They don't tell him Issam Ben Ali's Irish passport with me. So he's very kind with me. So he give me his card, and if you need any help, how's your health? Maybe 10 o'clock, someone from Irish Embassy they ring me. They said to me, "Do you know what time your flight?" I said to him, "No, nobody tell me. Just you have to wait." And then next day they. 9:30, yeah, they came to me and they take my details again, and your name, your mother name, date of birth, and they take me to airplane immediately. So they and they took my passport and they give it to the captain, and send me, you have to get, have a seat, and there's someone follow me behind me, and when I try to sit outside, he said to me, you are not allowed to, I'm coming to, you have to sit in the middle. I thought this security man, they are not guaranteed, or they're afraid maybe I do something in the plane, but I'm not crazy because I can't kill the people. I said to him, believe me, I can't kill dog or cat. So you want to me kill the each other? I'm not like Israel. Yeah. And then they brought me to London. When I arrived to London, I couldn't find my passport. So they said, I don't know where your passport. You have to ask someone. And I asked the security, English security. They said to me, we try to contact with the captain. They came to me again, I don't know where is your passport. Maybe lost. So I told them that my flight, I lost my flight. And the end, they came to me, Pakistani man. I said to him, he said, yes, I got your passport from lady, her name Sarah. And they give me another boarding bus. I'm leaving in Dublin. I arrive 7 o'clock. And I'm here.
Okay. Okay, at this point, I want to just let Beatrice specifically speak about the severe beating that himself and the other Irish citizen who is currently in intensive care in a Tel Aviv hospital received. Beatrice and Ken O'Keefe received a very, very serious beating yesterday before leaving Tel Aviv for trying to use the democratic process within Israel to appeal their deportation. Ken O'Keefe, as I said, is currently in intensive care in an Israeli hospital. He's an Irish citizen, and we're currently trying to establish more information on where he's at. We know that the Irish embassy in Israel has managed to get access to Ken, but we don't know how serious his injuries are. And I'm going to let Fikra briefly, if we can, just kind of fill you in on what happened with that situation.
We were not all granted basic things like allowed to go to the toilet. I do not want to name who, but one 80-year-old man had to pee himself because he was not allowed to go to the bathroom on our ship. When we were in Ashdod, they went, as was mentioned earlier, they went for the older people first. When they went to physically and violently grab Colonel Anne Wright, I protested, I raised my voice, I said, do not touch her, and I had a taser put to my head, at which point I decided that it was better, that I said, okay, I will go of my own free will, but that man needs to leave the ship and he must sheathe his taser, which happened. And as soon as I got onto the port, I repeated that I want to see a member of the Irish embassy. And I told the assorted press, which were Israel selected, that they were threatening to tase the people on the boat, because I did think that there was a situation about to occur which could have been violent, as even when we were in Ashdod, because there were a lot of gung-ho young bucks with guns who wanted to be part of the action, who were boarding our ship and wanted a piece of the action. The embassy officials were at Ashdod. They were denied access. You can confirm this with the embassy in Tel Aviv. They were protesting at the gates. They were kept away. Although Connor wants me to... He didn't have a placard or anything. He was quite ambassadorial at all stages. Okay, quickly, just to go through, once we were in the prison, another sort of mental thing, they kept on asking our names. Simple thing, coming into our cells, they checked us, they counted us once in the morning, once in the night. Our captain, Dennis Healy, was in the bunk above me. They came in, they counted us, it was easy to do, 1, 2, 3, 4. They made Dennis get down on his feet before they counted him. It was ridiculous. And all these sorts of things, at the very beginning they were aggressive. As we went on, we controlled them more than they controlled us, which I can get into later and tell you some interesting anecdotes. The And in the prison, it was an apartheid. I do believe we were the first prisoners. It was an apartheid prison. They had showers for the Palestinians, which were ours as well. They had cameras at all angles looking into the showers. For Israeli Jews, they had a separate shower facilities. They kept on trying to divide us at the beginning. They would do this by saying, okay, all the Turkish people come over to the side. There were communication difficulties between ourselves and a lot of the Turkish prisoners because there was only one or two translators who understood English. We resisted. We had formed a committee and we said we are not going to let the Turks be separated from us. Then they tried, okay, all the Muslims come to one side. We said, no, we are all together. We stay together and we asserted our authority. If anyone wants to interview me later, I can go into very interesting anecdotes about that whole prison experience. But I want to go and speak specifically about the last day, the transfer from Beersheba prison to Ben Gurion and everything that happened, because I was with Ken O'Keefe for that entire day, and we had a solidarity pact which I can go into later, because we weren't supposed to leave Israel together. I was led to believe he was already on the plane, and I was also intent on staying. We were the first to be brought to Beersheba. All of the males from Challenger 1 who did not accept immediate deportation were brought there, and then other people arrived from the Marmara, from the Sfandori, and from the Gaza. So we were brought there. On the last day, all of the males were processed in our... I got to meet all of the males who were there, and we had ongoing discussions about who should stay, who should not. The Greeks were going to stay, but their leader, the guy who they had delegated to represent them, was in extremely bad state, and they decided that in his best interest they would leave. At the end of the day, it was just myself and Ken O'Keefe who decided that we would stay. We had similar but not the exact same demands. I demanded that I did not... I was challenging deportation. I had gone before a judge, who, by the way, was eating a sausage roll, as I was... who asked me some questions. I said, I do not want to answer any more questions before I have legal and ambassadorial presence with me. But if you want to know, am I accepting or rejecting deportation? I reject it. I refuse to be deported. I want to challenge this in an Israeli court. He is a Californian-born man who served in the Gulf War. He's a U.S. Marine. He renounced his American citizenship in protest to what he was made do as a soldier. His experience in Desert Storm and other things. His mother or his grandmother is Irish. He has an Irish passport. He is very proud of his Irish citizenship, and he is also the holder of an honorary Palestinian citizenship and passport. His demand was that he would not be deported lest they deport them to either Gaza or West Bank. Of course, this did not go down very well, but that's where he's at, and he is still forcing that line at the moment. Okay, so I was transferred from Beersheba to Ben Gurion with Ken, with the captain of the Turkish ship, Mahmoud, and with another Turkish man called Iliram. We were brought there. Someone mentioned the sweltering heat on the way to the prison. It was also on the same way back. Not only were we left there for hours, but our guards abandoned us. We were literally in... we were in this tank, which was shorter... It was about as much just to sit beside each other. We had just enough space and just enough space to kind of stand up with our head crouched and turn around, where we could look out the grill and see we could see the Palestinian settlements the camps, the makeshift houses, and we could then we saw the entire contrasts and V signs from the Palestinians and fingers from some Israelis. Once we got to Ben Gurion, we were left in this paddy wagon for about an hour and a half. The guard was not there. We had not gone to the toilet. The only option left for one of us was to pee in a bottle, as you're with three other men, and it wasn't very comfortable. But eventually we did get let out. we were brought up. I saw my passport as I got off the paddy wagon. They said, they showed it to me and they asked me to confirm that this is me, and I did. I walked in, and because we had established our authority within the prison, I thought that within Israel they had kind of realised their mistake and they would not be so aggressive towards us. When we walked into the airport, I was with a number of people. I saw a man with a gun and I protested. I said, you have kidnapped us, you have murdered members of our party. I demand that all people with guns leave this vicinity now, because I have no reason to believe that you will not shoot us again. The man who claimed that he was in charge of the operation was a man called Yehuda Ben Ezra, Yehuda Ben Ezra, and he proudly told me that he was in charge of the whole transfer in Ben Gurion Airport. He told me that I was in Israel, I had no choice, I had to abide by the laws, and that they would shoot, they would point and shoot guns whenever they chose. We were eventually brought up to the, it was the normal part of the airport, it was completely locked down, and there were no civilians or media or anybody or diplomatic officials allowed anywhere near. We were beside the kiosks. We were sitting in a, we were sitting in seats, all relatively calm, all of us calm. Next minute, an American called Paul LaRudy was seen being carried off. We believe that he may have been rejecting deportation, was forcibly carried to the airport, at which stage a few of our number, perhaps 5 or 10 people, kind of stood up and said, hey, what are you doing? In different languages, mostly Turkish, but also in Arabic and also in English. We said, hey, what are you doing? He's a member of a party. Please do not manhandle him. I, for a second, thought it was the Irish-born journalist Paul McGough, and I knew Paul McGough, G-U-O-G-H, McGill. I thought, and I knew that he was always claiming his neutrality. He was not an activist. So if he had collapsed, I believed he had fainted. So, and I thought the Israelis had misunderstood this as a protest, and I was worried. So we were saying, leave him alone, put him down, check him. You know, if he's fainted, he needs to be checked. He's not protesting. We stood up. Immediately there was a baton charge on the people who were there. And I mean, there were maybe between 30 to 40 to 50 people. You were asking about uniforms. There were different shades of green. I don't read Hebrew, but like I think there was all every sort of security force that was possible on land there. And there were Mossad at all stages, and I can confirm this later. They beat the shit out of everybody, but they, Ken was there. He is a U.S. Marine, formerly trained U.S. Marine. He was not prepared to let older people to be battered, so he put himself in the way of other people, and then he became a target. He had his head split open with a baton. I was with the Turkish captain. He was only worried about leaving Israel without his ship. That was his demand. He wanted guarantees that his ship would return. So I grabbed the captain. Me and him went to one place. We were not part of the scuffle, but I was an eyewitness to the whole thing. What I did see through between the kiosks was different. On one person, there may have been up to 10 or more people. And if I could give a quick demonstration, what I saw on one of them was like, I saw one man lying down, his leg like this. One soldier, I saw him, and he was just like this hard, and like he was punching as hard as he could on the same place, and they did this on different people. Afterwards, the injured people were brought to different places. There was blood everywhere, various people, and I unconfirmed, but I believe the more seriously injured people at Ben Gurion were not sent to Ankara, but they have been sent to Amman in Jordan. But you might want to check that up. I came back. I sat beside Mahmoud. I looked around. Ken was not there. I did not know where he was. About 45 minutes later, I saw Ken leave. Ken is an outspoken human rights activist. He was in charge of organizing Human Shield before the illegal invasion on Iraq. He is absolutely peaceful at all times. He does not believe in violence, but he will use force to defend himself. And he, I mean physical force with his arms, but he will not use a weapon to get to Ben Gurion. After I came back, Ken was not there. I saw him a while later. He was draped in blood, and they were taking him off to somewhere else. he couldn't, it's as if he couldn't speak, because he was looking at me directly in my eyes, and I was like, Ken, where are you going? Are you okay? And he just looked at me back. As I said, he's an outspoken person. He would have shouted if he could have. I believe he was in severe trauma at that point. Now, I'll just quickly go into what I've learned has happened to him since. He was brought somewhere. I believe he was roughed up a bit more. And then they more or less were going to lift him and throw him on. As the last bus was leaving to take us to the aircraft, he was lifted. He was going to be put by force. He said, you can throw me out of the country, but it's completely by force and on your own will. And I am not going, and I am resisting. They were about to throw him onto the bus. They said, here's a bottle of water, wash your blood away. He refused. He said, no, I will leave Israel as Israel has left me. At which point they ordered the bus to leave. Eight of them then set into him, and I believe he is now in intensive care. He was taken away. I was sitting beside Mahmoud, and Mahmoud told me he would not leave me and I would not leave him, and that was fine. So he was the captain. I said, that's fine. I said, look, if you have to come to Turkey, you are my guest, and that's fine. You will be taken care of. And I said, okay, well, if they physically put me onto the airplane, if I don't have to sign anything, I would go to Turkey. At which point I had heard that Ken O'Keefe was actually dragged away and put on the plane. I thought when he was being brought away, he was being put on the plane. They asked me to come forward to check my documentation. I was sitting beside Mahmoud, as I am sitting now, and I said, no. Before I go anywhere, I want to speak to an embassy official and my lawyer. I want to challenge this in the Israeli legal system. I just want to finish off on my own. I want to tell you now about my own beating. I said I would not go anywhere. They grabbed me. One guy grabbed me by the arm. There was a few other people behind who I had who were kind of hostile to me when I told them that I actually had some Jewish family, and that they do not represent Judaism, and that they do not represent the wise and kind Jewish heart that has enriched our world for millennia, that they are thugs, they are fascists, and their actions do not represent Judaism. They did not like this. And when one guy grabbed me by the arm, they all set on me straight away. I was thrown to the ground. I was pressed. At this point, my head was. They were standing on me, kicking me. But I didn't see how many of them. But there would be eyewitnesses which can confirm there were between 50 and 20 of them. They were punching and kicking me. They held me in stress positions. They were four, and I made my body suitably limp, but not enough to let any one limb. I separated so that they were trying to break my fingers, and they were threatening to kill me as I was down on the bottom of the pile of them. As soon as I hit the ground, I said okay. This is for 2 minutes. I said okay. The women and other people who were eyewitnesses said he's saying okay, leave him go, but they were being. They really wanted to get at me because I'd been kind of cheeky. And I was handcuffed. I was brought to another part of the same room, handcuffed. They told me to sit down. They kicked my legs, so I had to sit down. And I was handcuffed. I responded to them all with a big smile. And I said, and I repeated, welcome to Israel, welcome to Israel. They did not like this. One guy came up to me and he threatened to shoot me dead, execute me at the time. And then more of them joined in, and they told me that they would kill me. They all had guns, they were pointing guns. And I believed it was well a possibility that I really did believe that within Ben Gurion Airport, one, myself or Ken or other people could have been killed at that point. I, at this point, realised they were not respect. They did not have any respect for any human being of our group. And when I tried to find accountability, I at different stages asked for the commander, for their superiors, who could I talk to? This would not help. So I asked to speak to a rabbi. I said, I want to speak to a rabbi. If I can't see my embassy, I want to speak to a rabbi who you might listen to. They denied me this. They responded to this by saying that I would see a rabbi at my funeral, that I would see a rabbi when they killed me, that I would only see a rabbi when I'm dead. I was they said that they would release me from my handcuffs if I behaved, and I said, I am behaving, but thank you very much. And I was sitting down. I was fully intent on staying and challenging this in the legal system. Other people who travelled on Challenger 1 requested permission to speak to me, and the Israeli soldier said, they want to speak with you, I will let you speak with them only if you go to Turkey. And I said, well, I haven't decided, I have to speak with them to decide before I... He goes, no, if I let you speak to them, you have to go to Turkey. They were intent on getting us out of the country as soon as possible, and in a minute I'll tell you why. I decided then to go. When I went back, my passport was not there. My passport had been there. I then left with my Mexican passport. My Mexican driver's license. I was put on the plane, and it was only after that I discovered that Ken was not there. Now, this is important, and you need to discuss this with Eva of the Free Gaza. The reason they wanted us off Israeli soil as quick as possible was because I believe, and you must check this out, the Supreme Court of Israel had ruled in our favour that we were victims, that it was illegal what had happened to us. The Israeli Supreme Court was ruling in our favour. Had that been upheld, we would have had to be either returned to the point in the sea where we'd been taken in international waters or brought to our destination. The Likud government could not bear this. They wanted us out as quick as possible, any means necessary. And that's why I mean, both the assault at sea and also in Ben Gurion were perhaps the most volatile and dangerous situations. It was well possible that somebody could have been killed within Ben Gurion.
Sorry, can I just emphasise something that Fekra has been referring to? The situation at the airport was extremely volatile, and I think because we ended up in a situation where we almost controlled the zone within the prison, I think people were taken a little bit aback when we got to the airport. I was relatively well treated passing through the airport. The only thing that happened to me was at one stage I was pushed forward quite violently, but wasn't hurt or injured. However, we sat on the tarmac for something like 10 hours because the Turkish authorities, the Turkish Airways, said that they were not leaving until everybody was brought to the airplane, until everybody was released into their custody. But during that time, people came on the plane from the terminal with broken fingers, with other injuries. They had been attacked and assaulted inside in the airport. I had a drink last night with some friends from Challenger 1, one of whom, a Dutch girl, Griet, who was actually the person that was hit in the face when Challenger 1 was attacked. So she's in Belgium, actually. She told me that as she was boarding the plane, or as she was in the airport terminal, she walked the passage that I had to walk, a staircase where there were soldiers and police on both sides, and they were literally hitting people like that. She was hit in the face by accident, in the sense that they were attempting to hit somebody else. They were backslapping people and they hit her with some force into the face. I don't know why that situation developed. Now, it probably was to send us off with a big dose of intimidation so that we understood
it. Which didn't work.
But the point is, I think it was the intention was to make quite clear to us that you know, they weren't going soft on us. So there was a very, very strong sense of violence in the airport terminal. Now, just one other point. Fekra has yet to get his passport back from the Israeli authorities. They've stolen his passport, as they have with other people. My passport was in the hands of the Israeli authorities for a number of days. Personally, I believe my passport is now compromised. Also, there's an Israeli stamp in that passport that I don't want in it. I can't go to Lebanon, for instance, with an Israeli stamp. But more to the point, after what happened in Dubai, I am not interested in carrying a passport that has been in the hands of those thugs. And I intend to hand this passport back to the Department of Foreign Affairs and insist that I have a new passport issued to me. I think I've every reason to be worried about the misuse of my passport.
This audio consists of edited highlights of the press conference held by the Irish-Palestine Solidarity Campaign on the return of some of the people who had been on the Gaza Freedom Flotilla from Israeli prison. You might also want to listen to the audio of the public meeting held after Derek Graham had returned from the Rachel Corrie. You'll find that on indymedia.ie at article 96973. You'll find more information on the campaign at www.ipsc.ie. The audio was recorded by Andrew Flood for indymedia.ie and the WSM website. You'll find more audio at www.wsm.ie.